Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I have with me Martin Tasmanian Devil Willis.
I don't think I've ever been called that, but yeah. I know you're saying that because I've just been really super busy, probably.
Yeah, yes. Today you're kind of like you're having to fit me into all your other busy work, and you got this going and that going. You just came back from Russia, for God's sakes, and it's just chaos in your life over there. But hopefully you're getting a lot done and having fun.
I am. Good. Yes. It's good to be home. I'm glad to be back in the States. Believe me, it was nice and interesting, but it's really good to be home.
Mm-hmm. Good. And so you must feel a bit like the Tasmanian Devil, huh?
I do, yeah. And then I have all this work waiting for me, and so that's what I'm downtown Boston today working.
Well, save the flatulent-like noises till after we record. Because if people remember, the Tasmanian Devil used to do that. But even the kids know who that is, right? Because Tasmanian Devil was like an old character when I was a kid, because Bugs Bunny was from so long ago, but... he's still a classic, right? Do the kids know you have a son? Did your kid know who that was?
I don't know. You know, I think it was Mel Blanc. I think that's his name that did all those voices.
Yeah.
And so he did the Tasmanian Devil, too. Yeah.
That's good stuff. Good stuff. Yeah. If you don't know the Tasmanian Devil, check it out, kids.
Right.
You'll like him. He's a funny guy, and he makes noises that are like that. But anyway, I guess I'll talk about who my guest is today. My guest is Mike Cleland. So we've had him on the show before, and like he talks about, he was nervous because he was like, I don't know. He has his own podcast, but he was developing these kind of ideas. He had these ideas going rolling around in his head that were not congealing in these thoughts. So we had him on the show. I thought it was only like a year ago. It turns out it was like 3 or 4 years ago. Or more, and then he came and spoke at the UFO Congress a couple years ago, and then just a few months ago he wrote a book about all of this stuff, and it has to do with owls and synchronicity and abduction and very unique perspective on things.
Yes, I like Mike. He's a very nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, and super nice.
And this whole owl thing is really fascinating.
Yeah.
You hear about this so many times. So people see an owl. And I've also heard a deer, too. They've seen deer, which is another strange thing. But, be a good show.
You know what? It is really unique, and he's a nice guy. So it's interesting stuff. He used to come to the UFO Congress every year. Even before we started doing it, and I used to see him there, but ever since he did his talk, he hasn't come to the Congress. So I confronted him about that on the show too. It was a very dramatic and exciting moment.
Well, he missed a good year last year.
Oh, no kidding. Reasons. Exactly. Yeah. You know what I forgot to ask him about? And
what's
would
that?
You be able to speak to this at all? A sighting that someone had. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I'll set the scene. Basically, I contacted him after when I was out there this February in Phoenix. Next door, over at the casino, you can get food there. That's one of the options. So I was over there, and I got to talking to a girl that worked in the casino, and she asked what was going on. I said, "Oh, it's a UFO Congress." She goes, "Oh, I should check it out." And I said, "Why?" And do you have an interest in UFOs? And she said, "Well, I had a weird sighting." So I said, "Oh, you got to tell me about it. I'm always interested in talking to people about sightings when they're not heavily involved in the UFO field. It's always great to get like outside perspectives." So she said she was in Hopi country with her friend. She was not driving. She was a passenger. And she said all of a sudden they noticed on this butte, off of a butte like a mesa, this thing was floating off and coming toward their car. And she said then it came right over the top of the car and it shot a beam of light straight down into the car. She lit up the whole car, scared them both to death. And she said they took off on the straightaway about 30 miles going really, really fast. And all of a sudden, she said an owl as big as the car. She said, I've never seen anything like it, came right down at the windshield and swooped up. So, I mean, what an amazing story. So I told, I emailed Mike. I got her contact information, and I don't think they ever connected. I think she was afraid to talk about it more. But, yeah, that was a pretty good owl story, I would say.
Yeah, that's really weird. That is an interesting one. So, and you know, I haven't heard a whole lot of owl stories. But yeah, that's a good one. That was funny. I remember when you came to me talking about this, a really interesting one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I bet Mike loved it because you shared it with Mike, right?
I did, and he was all excited about it and tried to reach out to the girl, but she just didn't respond.
Yeah.
Unfortunately. Yeah. And people do get nervous, you know, when they think they're going to get attract attention to themselves. They're like, oh, let's forget about it and all that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move on before I talk to Mike and get into the news. So you can start this off. You got a news story you want to talk about?
Sure. This is a real interesting one. A lot of people have been talking about this one, and it's an Alaskan witness videotapes a UFO emitting objects. And this is on Open Minds, and it was posted by Roger Marsh. And this video is really intriguing. And it's another, and I say another one because I've seen other one of these. It's like an orb sort of floating, and then eventually it emits these orbs that drop out of it. And everybody was talking about this recently. This happened back on May 13th, not that long ago. And this is in Alaska. And just a real interesting sighting. Have you looked at, did you look at the video and watch
it? I have. Oh, yeah, I have seen the video. And I think it's weird. It's one that I cannot, at least I haven't come up with an explanation yet. I have in the Open Mind UFO Forum asked Mark D'Antonio what he thinks about it, you know, the MUFON photo and video analyst. But at least as far as I've seen, I haven't followed up recently, but I haven't seen an answer from him. So, yeah, it's weird. I mean, at first it's kind of a boring light. You know, you're thinking big deal. But then, you know, these other lights kind of emit from it, and I don't know what could do that. What do you think?
Well, you know, someone said, oh, it could be a Chinese lantern and that, you know, it was falling apart or whatever, but I don't think so. But there are other cases of this, even daylight sighting video that I've seen before where you see these little spears, spheres coming out of an object, sort of similar, except they move all over the place. And, you know, some people say that, you know, those are drones coming out. And I believe I hear that in the audio of the people that are filming. You know, who knows? It's another mystery, but it's always intrigues me to see these ones.
Yeah, so you don't have an answer either.
No, I don't. And it's interesting you haven't heard from Mark. That could be good news because he usually answers right away when it's when he has an answer for it.
Yeah. So he's back in the offices with the government, Men in Black, figuring out what he should say.
That's right. Taking notes. Yeah.
So that's a really weird one. That is a good one. So yeah, everybody could check that out on the site, the Alaskan one. So we also are including that in our Open Mind UFO report that we post on YouTube this Friday. So yeah, weird one.
Yeah.
All right, so I got another one here, and this might be one that you took a look at. It's another video that it's hard to make much out of it. It's another triangular UFO sighting, this one in Virginia, and this one also recently. And this is a report where these people were driving. This was, let's see, I think in May 21st at about 9 p.m., And this guy's wife said, "That's not a regular plane." And they saw some lights in the sky, and the lights were attached to what they felt was a large triangular-shaped craft. So they said there were three lights. They took a photo with their phone, and they were kind of bummed because the photo only shows two lights, so you couldn't really get the feel, or they couldn't prove with their picture that it's a triangular craft. But it is a there are bright lights, so. Another photograph case that people can take a look at, and you can see, that this is above a Chipotle, and there are other bright street lights, but even comparison with those lights, these two bright lights are pretty bright.
So it was coming in for takeout, maybe?
Yeah, exactly, a burrito, which sounds
Yeah.
good, because I
It does
really
sound good
haven't
right
had
now.
lunch,
Yeah,
so.
same here. Yeah.
So yeah,
Wow.
aliens like Chipotle. We also posted another one today. Now this is a video. This is from West Virginia. Again, this person says they saw a triangular shaped light or a craft. They videotaped it for a short period of time, and all it is a very dim light, unfortunately. This one that was seen at 9:30 p.m. on May 24th, so similar time of day. But they did have a picture where the object looks like it's streaking because they said, they saw a light and it was moving very fast and then it stopped and went slow and it, hovered for a while. So it was moving strangely. That's what got their attention. And they have a photo of this light streaking, but then the video, you just see this really dim light. Now, some people, like Roger Marsh, who is the one who posted all of these stories, actually, we're talking about, he's a MUFON director of communications, and he writes UFO reports that MUFON receives on our website. And he says that when he was able to watch the video full screen and in the right light, he feels he could make out the triangular craft.
Really?
From the
Wow.
video, I can't necessarily see it, but we do have a cropped image that's kind of modified a bit, and you can it does almost look like maybe the light is reflecting off the body of a craft that I'm not sure it's triangular, but it's kind of bright in my office, so I'll have to take a closer look maybe in my dark office tonight. But yeah, so another triangle UFOs all over the place, huh?
Wow. A lot of people have mentioned, I just want to just say something. I had a conversation today with Chris Mellon, who's going to be on my show tomorrow, very deeply involved in the government that would know these things, DARPA and all that. He was overseeing everything. He said there was never been, to his knowledge, any type of craft like that or aurora or anything like that. There was articles that came out about the aurora and there was a congressional secret sort of congressional investigation, and they came right to him, and he tried to research, and there was absolutely nothing like that, no technology that we have that are like what these triangles are doing. Complete mystery.
Yeah, I had someone on the show who has a Black Triangles kind of page on Facebook, and he had an amazing sighting of a black triangle. And from his sighting, he was convinced that it is man-made, and it's a government. And this was near Area 51, and it's a government-made craft. I was low over him, and a lot of the triangular sightings are like that. These things are low over the
Right.
people, just like this one. I had someone then from Wales who had something similar. He's not so sure it's a man-made object, but he had another amazing sighting, we talked to. So it's such a huge mystery. Meanwhile, it doesn't seem like we would have this sort of technology. So
He was pretty adamant about it. He said, absolutely not.
yeah,
Absolutely not.
I mean, we
There's no sign of
definitely.
any type of technology we have like that.
Yeah, we definitely have black triangles and secret projects. I mean, people have spotted and photographed these black triangles. However, they're moving at rates that are similar
Normal?
to conventional technology. And in
Yeah.
fact, there's one image where you can even see a contrail coming from this craft. So most likely that's jet propulsion. Nothing too unusual. But yeah, to hover and stand still and then take off at great speed. It's totally mysterious. Good
We
point.
don't have it. We don't have it.
Another thing is, I do want to mention this, and I may mention this in our UFO report for later this week, but and I noticed you have it on your Facebook. But there
Uh-oh.
is the Secure Team 10 videos. It's so frustrating. So the UK tabloids again covered another one of these stupid hoax videos from Secure Team 10. And again, it's gone viral, and now we have like Fox News doing stories on it today. It's so frustrating, but I just want to remind people, Secure Team 10 is not a reliable source. They do fake videos. If you it doesn't take very much research to see people who have demonstrated evidence of that, but all you have to do is look at their past videos, really, and you'll see that they started with taking footage from war footage. Like from Iraq and stuff, and then adding UFOs into it using graphics. And they actually admitted to what they had done for a period of time, but they've taken that admission down because they're getting more play and more money by, people thinking their videos are real. So
Well, I have to
beware.
say this disclaimer that I do not admin my Facebook page. I know that sounds like I'm passing the buck
It
here,
is.
but it does, doesn't it?
You're the man.
But
You're responsible for everything that
for the
happens
content,
with
oh boy,
Podcast UFO.
I'm gonna have to fire her.
Well, I didn't even know. I thought maybe you posted it as a warning because we do that. Oh, if I post a video like that, it's to say, hey guys, look out for these hoaxes. But to be honest, I'm getting tired of posting those stories, so I don't even want to do it in this case. So I'm just
Yeah.
warning people via the show and stuff that, hey, there's a lot of fake videos out there, and
Well, I'm gonna have to check it out and see what she has posted on
yeah,
there.
because
Yeah.
so often when the UK tabloids are saying, "Oh, amazing video," it says Secure Team 10, and at least even with the the page UFO Sightings Daily, which posts a lot of bad stuff, at least they are not, I don't think, perpetrating hoaxes. And sometimes they post stuff that's good, that's not from these known hoax sources. But and same with the tabloids. But
Let me ask you something. Is this the one that shows like the video of in Ohio? Is that the one?
yes, yep, that's the one.
Ah, okay, that is going viral. I've heard about that.
Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's getting all over the place. And so,
Wow. And it vanishes
yeah.
into the cloud. Yeah.
Yeah, they've
Yeah.
had others like that kind of zap and move into the clouds and stuff.
Yeah. So
There
the
was
third
one of,
phase of the moon, yeah.
yeah, it's, yep, exactly. So, yep. Be careful, people. So that's all I
Okay.
have for the news. You have anything else?
No, I am washed up here in Boston.
All right,
Totally done.
washed up in Boston.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on the show and making some time in your busy schedule to come and talk to us.
My pleasure as always.
All right, let's talk to Mike. I am very happy to welcome back to Open Minds Radio, Mike Clellan. Hello, Mike.
Hello, how are you?
Good. And actually, I just realized something. We were talking about this just a minute ago about how, this is one of those things where I felt I had you on before, and I did, but it was actually when the show was called UFO Think Tank there for a little while. And so that's why. I think we're a little, I was confused about it. But anyway, welcome back. That was 2012, so that was a long time ago. I thought it was within like the last year for some reason.
No, I had you on my podcast with
Oh.
in the last year to talk about just sort of the scene at the conference and stuff like that. So yeah, so we were on a recorded podcast, but you were the guest and I was the host on that one.
Yeah, so that was a while ago. So it's been since that you spoke at the UFO Congress.
That's right. That would have been in 2014, in February of 2014.
And now you have a book out as well on the topic that you talked about at the conference.
That is correct, and the topic would be, the core of the topic is owls. Yes, the bird owls, the big with the big eyes, and the talk that I gave and the book's subtitle both have the same subtitle here. It's Owls, Synchronicity, and the UFO Abductee. And the book, I'm very happy with it. It came out just late last year in December of 2015, so That is 6 months ago, because May is the fifth month. That's six. That hurts my brain to think about it. It seems like that was just yesterday it showed up. And so I've been very happy. It's been selling in a way that, I mean, it's kind of a dinky little niche book when you think about it. It's not a dinky book. It's the book is kind of fat, but it's selling like I'm really happy, and people seem to be getting a lot out of it. And it's, so it feels great that it's out there and that I actually pulled it off and whatever. That's it's hard to write a book. I don't know what to say. Yeah, it was hard. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, I hear you. So. I guess to start off, just to remind people, we won't go totally into your deep past like we usually do, because you're not. This isn't the first time you were on the show. People can go listen to the first time. They'll be able to definitely find that on Blog Talk, or they can go to your blog, hiddenexperience.blogspot.com, and they can find a link to the show as well, and they can listen to that show. But remind us. And maybe it's changed since I last heard, but what you do as a on a daily basis, what your regular life is.
Well, my full-time job for a while now has been working on this book thing. I like kind of shut down my other work, which had been mostly doing illustration work. Yeah, I did a lot of illustration work, which quite honestly, in the age of the internet and stuff like that, it's kind of hard to find illustration work these days. So my illustration work had kind of like tapered off, which was sad, but at the same time, it allowed me to, to work on this book project. So I I'm working on a follow-up book, a second book, a companion book to the big fat book. It's the book that The Messengers is almost 400 pages. So, and this one will be a little bit more modest, and it's basically stories that were too complex that didn't make it into it. So, my job right now is to sit down at the computer and write this book.
Great. How is that going?
You know, I wish I was a faster writer. You know, I mean, Nick Redfern writes 10 books by the time I've had my second cup of coffee in the morning. So,
I don't know how he does that.
I don't know. Nobody knows how he does it.
Yeah.
I don't think, he's a remarkable guy that way. And Whitley Strieber does the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah, they write so quickly and so much. So let's get into, I guess, the book and what inspired you to write this book?
Okay, so you just interrupt me and if I drone on and on, because this is not an easy answer. This is
I
a
wouldn't
tough thing.
Imagine so, but luckily it's the beginning of the interview, so you have plenty of time.
Okay. When I was on the show before, I remember, and I listened to it recently, the conversation you and I had in 2012. I was really like nervous and kind of, wrapped really tight, and I mean, the reason is that I'm a UFO abductee, and I had been struggling to come to terms with that. And then that interview, I was kind of in the deeper waters. I just felt like I was, I was kind of freaked out. So, that's an interesting interview because you can hear it in my voice. I'm not at peace. Mm-hmm. Consequently, the act of writing this book, it was really therapeutic. So this is when I first started looking to my own experiences, it was triggered by a bunch of owl sightings. This is, doesn't seem like, I have to kind of explain what I'm saying here. Now, so that would have been 10 years ago. That would have been 2006. And at that point in my life, I had all these stories, these backlog stories, which I think I tell rather completely in the that other interview. Missing time, seeing kind of odd-shaped craft, UFOs rather close up. And then also, seeing like five gray aliens out my window at night, just waking up, looking out the window, and there they were, backlit by this weird bright light. Now, that stuff had been in my life. So I'm 53 now. It would have been 43 10 years ago. This stuff was kind of boiling up, the pressure cooker when it's just starting to rattle on the stove and it's going to hiss. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what I was like. I was not at peace, and I knew there was going to be a day when I was going to look into this, but I was putting it off. I wanted to deny it. I wanted not to deal with it. I wanted to push this stuff out. And I started seeing owls, and that started in 2006. These were just out on camping trips. very unusual circumstances. I was camping with a friend. She and I were, you know, the sun was setting, and all of a sudden these owls showed up, and there were like three of them, and they're flying above us, and it lasted for hours, just flying around, and literally to the point when the sun set and the owls were still flying around us, and we would lie on our backs and they would swoop down above our face and blot out the stars for just 1 second. We were sleeping out under the stars in this beautiful meadow, and this is high in the mountains in Grand Teton National Park. Now, when I saw those owls, and then to make matter stranger, her name is Kristen. We went out for one night in October, either September or October of 2006. I think it was September. And then we went out another night 4 days later to a totally different place and had what amounts to the identical experience. Three owls came and hung out with us as the sun was setting. And both times, now I didn't say this at the time, but I'm saying it now, both times at the time, in the moment, this like kind of booming inner voice was saying to me, this has something to do with the UFOs. This has something to do with the UFOs. And I kind of knew the implication of like the screen memory that shows up in abduction reports. But these were obviously very real owls. They were doing their flying around, and we saw them up close. They were perfectly, you know, these were not 4 foot tall, mysterious owls on a lonely road. These were, you know, 14 inch tall owls in a you know, meadow in the wilderness. Now, I tell that story a little more fully, and there's more details associated with that. But that event set me on this path. Like that event, you know, it was after that event I started looking into my own experiences. I started reaching out, and I contacted Leo Sprinkle and Bud Hopkins and worked with both of them. I was just shameless on trying to get help and answers, so I was reaching out to other, like Bud and Leo put me in touch with other experiencers. So then I would talk to these other experiencers. And one of the things I asked as I did this work, I mean, this work on myself, I mean, I guess self-therapy, this thing I would ask other people was, you know, have you ever had any odd experiences with owls? And it's not 100%, but it's enough that there's a very recognizable pattern that, yes, some people would answer that question. You know, that's interesting you ask, because I have had this really weird thing that happened with owls. And then they would tell me this story, and it was always so weird. And then after a while, I just continued asking the question, and I started archiving these stories and started, you know, kind of cataloging them. And then I realized I had enough for a little essay, and then I realized I had enough for a talk. And that's when I put the proposal in for you at the IUFOC. This would have been back, I guess, in 2013. I basically said, you know, I've been doing this research and I feel like I could do a good presentation. And I spoke on stage, and the talk that I gave in 2014, in a way, is what would be the foundation for the bigger book now, you know, and that would have been, in a way, the answer to that question when I ask people, have you ever had any strange experiences with owls? So this book has two separate threads. One is my own story. It's a little bit of an autobiography of an experiencer. But the core of it is more just focused on the owl thing and how it shows up in mythology and how it shows up as an archetype in more philosophical, you know, kind of exercises or thought experiments, and how it also shows up in the lives of people who've had the direct UFO contact experience.
Mm-hmm. So when you ask people about owls, I mean, it sounds like you've kind of examined this on a lot of different levels. Have you explored like what kind of owls mean to people, like what they represent?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Go on.
What have you found to the average person? Like what do they represent?
Well, to the average person, right? To the average person. Mm-hmm. So an average person, there's owls all over the place, right? They're mm-hmm. very common birds. You don't see them because they come out at night, but they're out there, right? So you see hawks flying in the sky and other predator birds, and that's pretty common to see. But you tend not to see owls simply because they come out at night. And, you know, so when someone sees an owl, doesn't have to have anything paranormal, right? It's nothing at all to do with UFOs, but I mean, if someone sees an owl, they will almost universally have this reaction of like, oh my God, it was so intense. I saw this owl. It was amazing. It just had this power. Whoa. You know, and I hear that kind of that awe in their voice. I mean, they have these huge penetrating eyes. They're predators. They've got an eerie, most birds have a twitchy neck, right? You know? Mm-hmm. So owls have this very velvety, smooth neck. And it gives them a very strange and eerie demeanor when you see them. So Joe Normal sees an owl. They're going to retell it to me because I hear it all the time. And they're going to tell it as like, wow, it was really incredible. It's really intense. And they're talking about a bird on a branch, right? You don't get that with people seeing bunny rabbits or anything like that, you know. So mm-hmm. owls definitely have an aura about them and a presence, you know. And there's a mythological aura about the owl, which I am convinced is traced right back to, you know, someone steps out of their cave and sees an owl on a branch. They're going to have the same feeling we have today, right? They're going to be like in awe and reverent of this powerful, mysterious bird.
Mm-hmm.
But the mythological core thread. This obviously, there's so much information. I mean, every culture in the world has got a mythology about owls. But the core thing, the thing that shows up all the time, is that owls fly in the night. They can see into the darkness, and this becomes a metaphor for seeing into other realms. So the owl becomes the totem of seeing into the land of the dead, or the land of our ancestors, or the lands of the gods, you know, the land of the gods. And so not only do they see into this realm, they can fly in the night. So they travel to this realm and come back with a message. Now, the term the messengers, it was suggested to me by a friend, and I recognized it was a good title. And once I, you know, sort of picked it as the title, even in old backlogged reports that I'd been archiving, you know, I recognized it over and over. People would just say it straight up. They would say the owl landed on the branch, and it brought a message to me. They would say it straight up. Now, this goes beyond simply the UFO contact experience, and I explore other avenues here. So people see owls around death. You know, owls will show up at funerals. Owls will show up at the home of someone after a loved one has died, often a parent or a child. And I have a lot of accounts of people, you know, going and talking to the owl as if it's their dead relative or their dead parent, and literally just going out. I actually have someone whose dog died and an owl landed on their back porch. They went out on the back porch and they talked to the owl and said, like, you know, thank you, Fluffy. It's so good that you came back. And I really am glad I get to say goodbye to you this final time. And I've heard that account, you know, over and over and over again, you know. And this is very pragmatic, even keeled, you know, non-New Agey people talking to the owl as if it's their dead parent or relative or dog. And so the owl. So if, you know, you look at the UFO contact experience, I'm sort of going out on a limb here, and this is
before we move to this, actually, because I'm kind of laying a foundation of first what they kind of mean to people. Before we move on to this other stuff that you've looked at. But I wanted to ask you about the wisdom part, because it kind of fits, you know, with what you're just talking about, you know, that they can see into other realms and things. Because there's also, you know, we always talk about the wise owl. He's
absolutely
kind of a symbol of intelligence and kind of has a knowing. And even when you look at the image on your book, which is just so great, I love the image. It's that perfect, iconic, you know, it's almost like what you would want your a king or a leader to look like, this confident, all-knowing sort of being that's there. So that's another aspect of it, right? The
wisdom, yeah.
Yeah.
So wisdom, that traces back most directly in Western man to the goddess Athena, the Greek goddess Athena, the goddess of wisdom. She was also the goddess of war and the goddess of arts and crafts and mathematics and other things. But she was the daughter of Zeus. She was a virgin goddess, and she had a companion owl. She had a, so you see pictures of Athena. She's often has an owl on her wrist, hanging on her wrist, and she'll have a little owl, and it's a tiny owl, and that was the owl that was supposedly would roost in the Parthenon. It's hard to know whether that's, you know, apocryphal or folklore, but supposedly the little owl, which is a actual a name, you can look it up, but in the, you know, little owl, it's a European and East Asian or West Asian owl called the little owl, and that was the owl that was the companion to Athena. So she. And it shows up even in what was the movie Clash of the Titans? Athena was played by some actress, some British actress, and she was walking around with an owl on her wrist. Now, so even today, right? You know, a little kid graduates from kindergarten, right? And then they thumbtack up a little cartoon of an owl with a graduation cap on the bulletin board, right? Mm-hmm. That traces back 3,000 or more years to the goddess Athena. And you know we still have that now, so that and this is, you know, how do you define wisdom? Wisdom is kind of one of those open-ended things, you know. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if the owl is the totem of something, you know, it is a totem of. At the end of this research, I'm seeing the owl more as the totem or the symbolic animal of the transformative experience. And yes, it's certainly wisdom does show up, and it shows up a lot in the book where people will say, you know, like the, you know, we'll point to the wise owl and how that shows up. But my sense is, after doing this research, and this is completely subjective, is that the owl would, for me, is the totem of the transformative experience. So the UFO event could be a transformative experience for people who have had direct contact. People tend to change from these experiences. And, you know, another thing, there's a big, long chapter in the book, people who go on a shamanic initiation, right? You work with a shaman and you're an apprentice. During that apprenticeship, you tend to have owl sightings and owl experiences very similar to what's reported by the UFO abductee, which I think is fascinating. John Mack did of his final book, Passport to the Cosmos, where he compared and contrast, where he compared and contrasted the UFO abduction experience with the shamanic initiation. And he references owls a lot in that book, but never as formally and as kind of like, I don't know, obsessively as I do in this book.
Mm-hmm. So you were moving on then to, I think, how that related to people and their UFO experiences.
Yeah. So here's like the simplest story, right? So this is one of the first stories I've got. It's a guy, friend of mine. I've become quite good friends with him. He told a story. There he was. He was camping out in the desert. This is some few years ago, and he's under the starry night, and he's with a buddy, and they're lying on their backs and they're looking up at the beautiful sky, and it's nighttime, and they say, look at that. There's an owl on that cactus right next to us. So there in the campfire light, this owl's all lit up. It's very eerie. They have exactly what we just talked about, that presence. It's really intimidating. This owl staring down at him. Owl flies off. Moments later, a triangle UFO goes right above their campsite and goes down the canyon. And he mimicked the motion it made. He said it was contouring the land in this very unusual way. It wasn't flying like a normal aircraft. And the same fellow has since gone on to share other accounts with me. Said that he's had dreams of being lifted out of his bed by, you know, skinny beings and being passed through the wall. He's also had in recent years, and he talked to me and confided in me, and it's in the book, and I talk about it. Like, he basically says at a certain point, like, I had a spiritual awakening. My life changed. So these are the little clues, these little tidbits that are dropped in my lap, and I'm, you know, playing with these puzzle pieces, trying to see the bigger pattern. So, you know, that story there is very typical of the kind of stories that are reported in the book. And what actually happens is as the book proceeds, if there's a progression in the book, the stories, you know, start rather tame like that one, and then they get progressively weirder. Richard Dolan, who was the editor of the book, I told him that same thing. I'm going to correct myself. He said, no, Mike, they don't get weirder. They get deeper. These stories get deeper. And, so what I've found is that there's a very powerful, you know, message with these owl sightings. That takes a little bit of work, you know. So that's just, sometimes I say, like, if you have a UFO sighting, right, and you've had a UFO contact experience, you know, who do you call? Do you call the MUFON investigator, you know, to come in? They'll show up at your house and they'll, you know, ask you what time it showed up and, you know, which way it was traveling and where it showed up in the sky. Or do you go seek out the shaman at the local Indian reservation and say, listen, I had this UFO experience. And then the shaman would say, you know, what was going on in your life? What was going on in your heart at that point in your life? What has changed since then? So, I mean, both of these avenues of inquiry are important, but this book is kind of heavily weighted towards the more mystical, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what are your thoughts then? What's going on there? I can see, for instance, that perhaps because we have this archetypal image, this the owl fitting an archetype of seeing inside of us, and seeing what we can't see. Do you think that concept then is triggering the self-reflection or opening up or looking deeper inside ourselves than we would have otherwise?
You know, I don't know. That's like which came first, the chicken or the egg? I don't know. Is the owl attracted to the power of the individual's experience, or is the individual's experience triggered by seeing the owl? You know, this is I don't have a good answer to that, and I wrestle with that in the book, exactly the question you brought up. It's a quandary, because some people's stories it plays out one way, and some people's it plays out another way. You know, so here's an example. So, do you know Rebecca Hardcastle Wright?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she's in the book. She's very open with her experiences, very forthright and open that she's an experiencer. She's had direct UFO contact. She doesn't like the term abduction, and I understand that. It's a messy term. It's got a lot of baggage. But she tells a story, which is fascinating to me. This is right at the point when she's experiencing, she was living in Phoenix, and she was experiencing a lot of contact. I think it was in the 90s. And she comes out of a little suburban strip mall, right? And she's in a totally bland parking lot anywhere in America. And up on a big light pole right above her is an owl. And it looks down at her, and she looks up at it. And she gets a telepathic message in her mind that says, you are not who you seem to be. And later that night, she had a contact event. She had a typical UFO abduction event. So how, you know, what does, where, all I can do is tell that story as faithfully as, you know, matching the story she told me, and you know, kind of wonder what it might imply. There's an aspect to this that is very mysterious, and the implication is that in a way the owl is playing the same role that it played to ancient man. You know, there's these myths in place that have been passed down throughout the ages. And they're, in my opinion, they are still reoccurring today. And they're showing up for the UFO experiencer as well as other people. You know, people who meditate a lot see owls at unusual times. And also, I guess I already said it, the death thing, yeah, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, what it makes me think of is Rainbow Eagle. And I don't know if you remember him, because you used to come to the UFO Congress. You haven't been there since you spoke,
I know, I think. I did this thing, and I kind of got, you know, I went broke is what I did. So, yeah, so by you know, you write a book, and it takes a few years to write it, and you live on credit cards for a little while.
Were you there when Rainbow Eagle was there?
No.
Well, he is another shaman, you know, he's a kind of an elder out there talking about his whole thing is more of opening up to other cultures, because a lot of Native American cultures don't do that, and he thinks that's important, and so do all of the you know, elders he's worked with, and trying to teach, you know, other people in America, you know, the positive things that they've been able to learn. And one of them is going out into the woods, a walk in the woods. I think that's the name of one of his books. And the whole point, and it's a beautiful talk, the way he talks about it, is how Looking at nature for answers and for to being able to move on for help, and that a walk in the woods, you know, and meditating. He didn't use the word meditating, but essentially thinking about issues or a problem you have. Often you can observe nature and come up with things that they're doing.
I agree.
You know, there's a lot of Asian cultures that are similar. Where you use the kind of the spirit of the different types of animals, whether that be looking at ants and seeing how they overcome some huge issue that, or an owl, I guess, that would help you perhaps become more insightful. It's interesting.
I have two accounts in the book where people are going on a hike.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're driving to the, you know, they're just going to go for a hike for the day, and they're driving to the little trailhead, right? And so they're going to park their car. And as they're driving, both these two people have this sense like, oh my God, this is the day. I'm going to meet an alien. And they knew it. They felt it. They're like, oh God, I'm going to have an alien experience today. I'm going to meet an alien. So there's two people, one named Karis, and I think the other one's name is John. I got to be careful. I'm doing this from memory in the book. So Karis goes out and she hikes to a spot, and then all of a sudden she feels like she's pulled to hike off the trail. She hikes off the trail, and then she's kind of like, oh, and she kind of crashes through the trail off into the bush a little bit. And she's said, and then she hears this, directed, like, sit on that rock there. She sits on the rock, and it's like, move a little to the left. No, not that far, a little back. Okay, right there. Okay, okay, stop. Don't move anymore. And then she realizes she's lined up exactly to see an owl through a tunnel of branches. And then she goes on to have this extremely trippy telepathic communication with the owl, where basically the owl, you know, plays – it's the same sort of telepathic communication that an experiencer might have with an alien on board a craft. So that's one story. There's another story. The guy John goes hiking, and he knows today's the day. I'm going to see an ET in the woods when I'm hiking. So he sees an owl. Stands on the trail, and he says, okay, I'm going to win this stare down contest with the owls. So they stare at each other, and he realizes this goes on and on and on. He's like, I'm not going to win this. So he just walks away. And as he walks away, the owl watches him. So I think it's in Massachusetts, and he climbs this, you know, this summit, you know, it's kind of a modest East Coast summit, and the trail takes him right to the top of this hill. And he gets this pretty view. And while he's on the top of the hill, there's this bright light sort of hovering off in the horizon. And people on the top of the trail are like, what the hell is that light out there? What is going on? Where is that coming from? It's the language a little more colorful when I just transcribed it accurately. But so you know, here's a guy who goes into the woods expecting to see an owl. He sees I get them mixed up, owls and aliens. So he expected to see an alien, sees an owl instead, and then he literally sees a UFO. The next morning he meditates, and there's an owl hooting out his window. Never happened before. As he's meditating, hooting, and it stays there for weeks. So these are the, you know, all I can do is tell these stories, and there's a mood and a flavor to these stories. To try to analyze them too much is like, you know, whatever. It's kind of a, puts you into a corner in a way. You know, paints yourself into a corner, because it's how do you analyze something like that in any thoughtful way?
Mm-hmm.
But to me, these stories, both these stories, have a lot of power to them, a lot of impact to them. For me, anyway, personally. And as an aside, I did work for a long time. I worked for 17 years for an outdoor school where I taught advanced expeditioning, you know, camping and mountaineering in very primitive wilderness environments. The trips I worked on were 30 days long.
Wow. So when it comes to your abduction experiences, is there a similarity between the sense of, or the feeling that you had about, you know, these entities that you interacted with and the owls?
Now, okay, so I'm calling myself an abductee. Uh-huh. I have no direct memories that you're describing of, like, being on board a craft. And maybe I'm being presumptuous to say that about myself, but I feel like I make the point in the book probably better than I can in the short format radio. I would need like a couple hours to really. But so, like, if you have like a puzzle, right, and the puzzle's on the table and all the pieces are there and all the pieces are, but there's a few pieces missing, right? You can still stand back and say, oh, that's a sailboat on a lake, right? You can see it clearly. I'm at that point now where I don't have the experience of having a memory on board craft. I certainly have dreams of being on board a craft.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have any what I would refer to as conscious memory. I have conscious memory of being in a white mystical realm that was like seemed like a timeless, ambient white realm. And that showed up at a moment of, like, I basically was elevated out of a tent. Felt like I was at the elevator up feeling and floated out the roof of a tent and then was suddenly in this white realm. The next thing I knew, I was back in the tent. The next morning I had a big scratch. There was all these weird, that story in itself has got a lot of clues and I could take a long time to tell that, but I have these other accounts, missing time and things like that. But I haven't gone through hypnotic regression. I've tried it a few times. It's never worked.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because of my own anxiety, I think. I feel like I would probably be a little more at peace now than I was then. But when I gave that talk at the conference, like the last 20 minutes was telling this very complicated set of events that had one story after another, and then they all lined up on a map. And they and one of those stories had an owl. Like I was sleeping out under the stars, very similar to what, you know, Rainbow Eagle said, you know, go out into the woods, sleeping out under the stars, which is something I love to do. And there was an owl hooting right at my head as my friend Natasha was sort of walking, took a little walk in the, this was out in the desert of Utah. She was jet lagged. She was coming from Germany and I was sleepy and tired and she was just got up and took a little walk. And then, so while I was listening to this owl, she saw a glowing white floating orb rather close to where we had camped. Now, you know, so I guess I'm not telling that these set of stories in its completeness. The time just won't allow it. The book covers it in detail, as does the talk I gave. So if anyone wants to purchase that DVD, that would be a good, or it'll be told in its completeness there with visuals and things. But these events, these multiple separate events, all lined up on a map, and to me, it had a profound personal power. Like I just felt like my old life ended and my new life began when I lined these three separate events up on a map. I only told two of them. Another one was actually driving home from the UFO conference and camping out on the side of the road, once again, sleeping out under the stars. And I just sat there for hours, it felt like, and looked up at this hillside. And there was a round structure that I said to myself, that looks just like a landed UFO. Landed flying saucer. I've since gone back to that same exact spot. There's nothing there. There's no round structure on that hilltop. And I could pinpoint it exactly. I did map readings right after that, seeing it. And so anyway, I'm sorry, I'm dancing around a little bit. But so your question was, how do these owls seem to mimic the sort of alien intelligence?
Well, I guess, now, given what you've just told me, do you have a sense then, you don't have direct memory, but do you have a sense that you interacted with, other beings at some point, even if you don't have a direct memory of that? It seems like you feel like that has happened.
Well, I have a sense that it quite probably happened. I can't mm-hmm. say that for sure. So that's just like, you know, that's a very fuzzy sense. So I mm-hmm. have that sense and I also, my life has changed since that event in 2013 where I lined those three things up on the map. So
do you have, so I guess my question would be, and I guess maybe the answer is no. Do you have any sense at all of these beings that you may have interacted with?
Well, I certainly have a memory of seeing them, you know.
Oh, in right, right.
What would be waking consciousness? Yeah. So I don't have any memory of. I have some memories of very odd telepathic communication.
Mm-hmm.
You know that you know, like I'm being very. I'm being very cautious how I phrase this stuff because all I can do is answer truthfully. So the truthful answer is like my telepathic memories and my little flashes of memories that have reemerged. You know, those could have just popped out of my own subconscious somehow, or they could be traced back to a real event. What I can say is that I feel like I'm much more peaceful and much more calm after completing this book and after sort of integrating that confirmation event that took place around 2013 with lining those three things up on the map.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do not have the kind of thing that shows up in, you know, like a book by Dave Jacobs or Bud Hopkins where, like, you know, I'm under hypnosis and there's a, you know, transcription of what I recall under hypnosis. I don't have that. I certainly have some things that are very telling. And if, as far as like, you know, I feel like I'm in the role of UFO investigator myself, specifically an abduction researcher. And, you know, I have a lot of experiences that are very telling and certainly imply, you know, these things.
Mm-hmm. I guess what I was getting at is kind of along the lines of some people believe they've got some screen memories where they remember animals, mostly like deers around their bed, and they later feel that they realize those weren't deer, those were aliens or, you know, the typical gray type of guys. So I was wondering if you had felt similar with the owl imagery.
I certainly have recorded some in the book of owls that show up around beds, just exactly like what you said. You know, people, squirrels actually show up around beds too. You know, like people, giant squirrels will show up around people's beds, but which is obviously some sort of, well, would, could be seen as a form of screen memory.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Now, like I have to say, like I don't have those experiences, and I suspect they're in there, buried in there, but I can't say that with any kind of surety.
Mm-hmm. Having been around and working with people who talk about these sorts of experiences, what is your perspective on that whole idea of abduction versus experience?
Well, I mean, abduction is the word we're stuck with, right? I mean, that's the one that's in our pop culture, and I'm content with that. It's not a perfect word. It kind of implies something negative, but I use it all the time. I use it. It's right on the cover of the book. It says abductee right on the cover of the book. You know, some people, actually, Leo Sprinkle, you know, came down to me kind of hard in a letter. He said, I wish you hadn't used that book, you know, because experiencer is a better word and contact is a better word. He's right, but those aren't the words that we collectively are comfortable with in a culture. So, you know, I mean, I feel like I've certainly experienced some extremely weird stuff, you know, and psychic knowing, psychic visions that come true. And, you know, UFO sightings and missing time and extremely powerful and strange synchronicities. In the core of my synchronicities all are around this UFO thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't have synchronicities about, you know, mundane stuff. It seems to all be sort of tied into this web of this UFO stuff. So, what I found in the research is that there are a lot of people out there who don't have the memories that, you know, that like, that are described in like the onboard events in a book by Bud Hopkins. A lot of people don't have those memories. They have a lot of the memories that surround that, you know, so it, once again, the puzzle, there's pieces missing, but you can still interpret what the puzzle is with those pieces still missing. And my sense is that a lot of the people who have seen the owls, you know, odd experience, people say, oh, you know, I had this odd experience. I saw this UFO. And right after that, this owl hung out around my house. It's always there. That shows up over and over and over again. And what I found is those people don't have the direct memory of being abducted. I don't know whether it happened or not.
Mm-hmm.
If I had a big budget and all kinds of time, I could research every single person and come to a better conclusion. Right now, I can only say that, you know, like I kind of suspect it might have happened. And then, you know, these folks are the ones, not 100%, but these are the folks who are reporting the owls seemingly the most, the folks who are still on the fence about their own contact experiences.
Hmm. And then the word UFO, was there a reason you chose the word UFO abductee as opposed to alien?
You know, I just think that no. UFO abductee is, to me, alien abductee and UFO abductee is the same word. It's a synonym, right? So there, that's, I just, I, it, I didn't Yeah, I have no answer to that. I didn't even think about that till right now. I do say, UFO abductee a lot. I think that's the same word in essence as alien abductee.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious because, sometimes people are really careful about their words. Like, I'm really careful with the choosing the words. But of course, I'm dealing with words all day long, writing these stories, blah, blah, blah. And I get so much feedback. But I was curious because UFO is more of an ambiguous term. So, and it does seem like you're open to, you're exploring these reports and experiences people are having. But you're reticent to come to hard conclusions, which is wise, I think.
Well, and I think if I mean, I would be lying if I came to a hard conclusion because I don't have a hard conclusion. I go, the culmination of the book is kind of me saying, I don't have a good answer, but here's some things that it might be. Mm-hmm. And honestly, so the owls to me represent the totem of transformation, a transformational experience. And they also represent a sort of an alarm clock. Like I can't, there was a real power, 10 years ago, I saw a bunch of owls in the woods. I heard a voice in my head clearly saying, this has something to do with the UFOs.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot, that's real. Like I'm not exaggerating. And it led me down this path.
Mm-hmm.
And this book, I guess a lot of some people have the experience. I've talked to other authors and they've, but this book in a way wrote itself, I have been like, if you Google UFOs and owls, I'm the first thing that comes up. I'm like the first seven or eight things that come up, So if you're in New Zealand, you've never read a UFO book, never got online or except to, check your email and you have an experience involving a UFO and an owl, you Google, you look it up online, you're going to find me. And so I'm receiving these stories. Like I'm literally receiving what amounts to a very powerful, remarkable, unbelievable account. Often that begins with, I've never told this to anyone, but I'm telling you. I'm receiving those kinds of stories once a day. So I'm just like, I'm flooded with these owl and UFO stories. Obviously, I'm not at all objective, right? I'm completely subjective. I'm not looking at the totality of the UFO experience or the UFO phenomena, I am looking at a tiny, tiny little fractal piece of it and getting very obsessed about that little piece of it. And at the same time, what I'm finding is there is a bottomless pit. Like I've picked the smallest, most seemingly insignificant part of a grand mystery. And what I'm finding is in this tiny thing, owls, it is so rich with what I feel is like profound meaning. And I'm still baffled by it and I'm still amazed by it. I get reports. I got a report this morning, and I'm just as perplexed and at the same time, just as dedicated as I've been for the last, few years to try to at least, keep archives of these things.
Mm-hmm. It almost seems as like, and this is something that somehow you almost couldn't express yourself. It was something that was there that needed to be explored inside of you. Almost like you were maybe a bit reticent or maybe confused. You were still trying to understand what it was you were trying to explore. What do you think those are the aspects of what you made you a little uncomfortable? Like, the last time we were together on the show?
Well, this is creepy stuff, I mean, the thought of like, what did I have direct contact with, UFO occupants? Am I somehow intertwined with the UFO mystery? That's a creepy thing, man. Like nobody wants to hear it, except people who listen to your podcast and such. But, that is like, that's a recipe for being like ostracized from friends and family members. It's not a peaceful thing to go through. I mean, you obviously have spoken with many of people who've been through this experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you've probably, I don't know. I don't want. But I mean, I've had, you know, it's not uncommon. You talk to people and they start crying. You know, this is very challenging emotional stuff. And I was in the throes of it then. I feel like I'm much more at peace now. And partially, I got to be honest, like I feel like I just got bored with being stressed out. And at the same time, I feel like I needed to organize my thoughts in some way to help myself come to terms with this. And this book is the act of me wrestling with the grander mystery. Like I'm focusing on a tiny fractal thing, this little insignificant thing, owls. But in doing so, I am trying to come to terms with this grand mystery of the UFO stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm no closer to an answer than I was at the beginning. I'm closer to being at peace about it. And there's a mood or a feeling that surrounds, you know, what the reports I've collected.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for the most part rather reassuring. This is not gloom and doom stuff that is, some of it is. That's okay. But the vast majority of these owl accounts, owl and UFO accounts, you know, are kind of weighted on the optimistic side.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a relief for me. I did not know that going into this, how it would play out.
And if you were to describe that sense then of what these experiences typically, you know, kind of represent, or would it be that transformation or more than that? Because you're kind of talking about how, you know, you're kind of getting a sense of what this is about, or at least not about, but the kind of atmosphere of it.
Yeah, so I cannot speak to, you know, our, you know, alien human hybrids, you know, coming, you know, going to take over the Earth or something like that. There's all kinds of conjecture and conspiracy, and people are jumping to connect dots that are, you know, that I find I can't quite, I'm not in a position to connect those dots the way some other people do.
Mm-hmm.
And the UFO stuff is rife with, like, you know, a wild conjecture and almost a religious zeal at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to walk the line, right? I tried to stay very grounded. At the same time, I didn't look away from the very weird, bizarre stories. I tried to wrestle with those and tried to make sense of those, or at least let's just say report those,
mm-hmm.
you know, in a way that was clear to the reader. And in the end, my sense is that there is a mystery at play. It doesn't play out like little aliens coming from another planet on board a metal spaceship. It's much more ethereal than that, in my opinion. That is too simplistic of an answer, that little scientists are coming from another planet to perform medical examinations or run some sort of scientific program here on Earth. My sense is that there's something much more mystical at play. And that what I'm seeing in the people who've had these experiences, you know, here's like a weird example. Like I cannot tell you how many people, I'm not going to say the majority, but I would guess that it's probably a large percentage of the people I interacted with who had these UFO and owl experiences are also practicing Reiki healers. So they're doing hands-on healing work. And I ask them, so why'd you take up Reiki healing? I'm like, I don't know. I just had this, like, one day I woke up and I said, I got to start practicing Reiki. I got to go take classes and become a Reiki healer. So there's this kind of, you know, there's a benevolent picture that emerges at the end for me in this research, in this, you know, in this very focused research. And I wish I had, you know, I wish I could be more concrete, but the, you know, all I'm doing is a collection of stories in a way when you get right down to it. So the book is, you know, 95% of the book is a collection of story and 5% is of me doing a little bit of speculating about, you know, what may or may not be at the core of this thing. So most of this is just stories, and my own stories included.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great that you can feel so fulfilled and positive about what you're doing. And it sounds like you found, that's what's really interesting, a niche that's out there that no one kind of expected.
Yeah, I'll flip that around. I'll say the niche found me. I mean, I did not go out looking for owls. Like I was flooded with owls. 2006 to 2009, those 3 years, it was off the charts how many owls I was seeing, and it was
like
freaking me out.
Alfred Hitchcock Birds movie, and you're
not quite. They weren't like coming by the thousands. Like they weren't like, you know, lining up on the playground equipment in the elementary school. You know, like as I walked by. No, but I certainly saw owls at a rate that was not normal. Like, I actually went to an ornithologist. I talked to a bird expert, an owl expert at one point, and said, like, oh, here's what happened to me. Like, after this, and I saw these owls, and then I walked to the woods. I saw five owls. I was here with a friend. I saw three owls. And then this other time, I saw two owls. And then I was alone at night, and this owl, like, landed on this tree right above me. And I'm like, is that normal? And he's like, no, that is not normal. It's not how people see owls. So those years were very powerful for me.
Yeah.
And now I feel like I see owls every once in a while, and I don't, you know, like, I'm very aware of when I do see them, but I don't need convincing anymore. I felt like at the time I did need convincing, and sort of mystical forces were at play and hitting me over the head with the big, you know, the big wake up stupid, you know, alarm clock club, you know, like, and now I'm and out of that came this book.
How cool. Well, I love it, the stories too. I'm a nature lover, and I'm out there. I'm an animal lover. I'm always aware of the animals around and of all types, but I love owls. I mean, owl experiences are for me more rare, and so each one is special, and you know, I haven't so yeah, you're lucky to have so many experiences with them, because I get very excited every time that I get to spot one or hang out, and I love just kind of walking around, and because they follow you with their head,
big eyes, their head turns and stuff like that. Yeah, there's a wildlife raptor center nearby here, and I've gone and visited, and the owls are like lots of owls. I don't know how they get so many owls. I think owls actually, it's very common for them to get bumped on by cars, and then the people bring the wounded owl in, and you know, if they can't fly, they can't release them into the wild again. So oh my god, there's just like, so I've been nose to nose with a lot of owls in it, you know, completely normal setting. There's nothing mystical at all about that, but they've got an intense vibe about them for sure.
Well, thanks for coming on the show again. So you've got a new book you're working on that'll be out, and you have a podcast. What else do you have going on right now, and where can people find all of this?
Well, to find information, you can go to my website, which is hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. It's a blog, Hidden Experience, all one word. Or you could just Google my name and owls, and it comes right up. Or you can Google UFOs and owls, and it comes right up. So I'm easy to search out. And if anyone has an interesting owl story, I want to hear it. It's very easy to get my contact info on the site. And and I would say that when I gave that talk at the UFO conference, this would have been in 2000. So a lot of people came to that talk, which was on the very first day of the conference in 2014. People with owl experiences came to that talk, and then they found me right afterwards. I was flooded. I was swamped. And people, just one story after another, very similar to the stories that show up in this book. So this is, in a way, like, it's something that is untapped in the bigger UFO, in the UFO literature. You know, owl stories show up in other books, but I feel like I've worked hard to kind of collect all these stories and put them in one book.
Did you do the illustration for the cover then?
I did. It's actually, it was a photograph, and I retooled the photograph. I made a high count, and all the branches and stuff like that, weren't part of the original photograph and stuff. So that was me. I'm an art director in my other life. I did a lot of art direction. So I art directed the cover, and there's some illustrations on the inside, specifically the physiology chapter, where there's some illustrations of owls, and I did those, owl skull. And
cool. Yeah, because the book looks, I love the cover. I mean, it just really draws you in.
Good, good. And I was very proud of myself for like doing a UFO book without a UFO on the cover. That was like a personal
Yeah.
challenge to me because there's some like I want to be careful. I don't want to be too judgmental, but there's some bad covers out there.
There are so many bad covers. I've talked about that on the show before, and I wish people would seek out better art because it's not that hard to find it, but and it makes a big difference. So, thank you again for coming on the show again. It was great to catch up with you and to talk to you again.
Good, wonderful to hear your voice. Yeah, that's great. I look forward to bumping into you again. I'm going to try to make it to the conference again sometime soon.
All right, hope you do.
Yep.
Thank you so much to Mike Clellan for being on the show again. Remember, you can find his website at hiddenexperience.blogspot.com, or like he said, owls and UFOs or owl and abduction, and you'll find him because he's the only guy writing about this. Because, like I said, it's a very unique kind of perspective on things, no doubt, and I'm sure you all will feel similarly. But there you'll be able to find his book, The Messengers, Owls, Synchronicity, and the UFO Abductee by Mike Clellan. Like I said, I'm an animal lover. I love owls, and I like the image on the front of his book, too. So check it out if you want to find out more about these stories, these weird stories, like the one that Martin told us at the beginning of the show of people having these strange experiences with owls. And then if you want it to read more about, I guess, their connection with UFOs and abductions, you'll have to read his book. So some interesting stuff. The news that Martin and I talked about at the beginning of the show, you can find at openminds.tv. You can also find the Open Minds UFO news or report that I talked about that we post to YouTube, and we have on our front page. And this week we covered some cool stuff. So if you like videos and audio, you know, like some of you do, instead of reading, you can go watch that. We covered those 17th century sightings that I talked about, the Euro-Russian ones with that Paul Stonehill wrote about on the site. Also, we talk about a Louisiana witness and show some drawings that they shared. And then we talk about the FAA and John Greenwald. And, you know, we've talked about some of that too. Just the allegedly that they only have a couple UFO files, which is kind of silly. So we got John Greenwald's take on that and what he felt about what he found when he went looking for the FAA's UFO files. All at openminds.tv. So I want to thank Caleb Hanks for the opening and close music. A couple, you know, actually, I have a UFO Congress update. UFO Congress update, people. We're going to start taking registration in like tomorrow. So if you haven't registered yet, I know many of you have heeded my advice and gotten a room at the Weekapaw Resort. Very wise decision because it sells out so early. We're in fact afraid, you know, that the hotel's going to be sold out like within weeks of us starting to take registrations because it sells out earlier and earlier, and we have more and more people interested in coming to the conference. So get your hotel room early. You'll be able to register starting tomorrow. We don't even have the speakers announced yet, but we are going to, you know what? I'll tell you a couple. This I haven't even posted it. I haven't even confirmed this yet with what I have with the speakers. But you know, we don't have it all, you know, formalized and everything. But I'll give you one I can think of because, you know, my brain is preoccupied with other things. But one I can think of that I'm really excited about is Ryan Sprague. He just wrote a book. He was one of the volunteers at the conference, but more than that, he has his own podcast. Yeah, he's got a book that's going to be published by Richard Dolan. But anybody to know Ryan Sprague is to love Ryan Sprague. And if I am correct, we are the first to have him speak. So we are honored and proud to have Ryan Sprague coming and speaking at the UFO Congress in 2017. Another interesting and great thing he does is he's a playwright. So he lives in New York City. His plays His scripts have been being turned into plays, and they seem to be doing well. He's going to have a play on the Rendlesham Forest, actually. But just a great guy, and this is going to be a lot of fun to have him come and speak at the Congress. So that's one of the people we have confirmed. There's a little bit, a tidbit of information. So we'll start registration tomorrow. You'll be able to go to the website and get more information about registration. And hopefully within a week or two, we'll have about, 10, maybe a dozen of the speakers we've got figured out so far up on the website. So this is exciting. It's going to be February 15th to the 19th. And a fun time will be had by all. You know how I know that? Because at the UFO Congress, a fun time is always had by all. You even heard Martin, Willis, talking about it at the beginning of the show. He's so, overwhelmed by how wonderful of an event it is. Of course, we get to all see each other, and that's also wonderful as well. So this will be a lot of fun. Otherwise, in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be going to Roswell. I'm going to be speaking out there for their festival. That's going to be June 1st and 2nd. So that'll be a lot of fun. If you're in the area, maybe come by. And then MUFON Symposium will be in August, and I'll be doing a talk out there. I just get the symposium proceedings with MUFON, because with MUFON, they write us proceedings, put one out where all of us who talk write papers. So I wrote an exhaustive paper that took me research and time to write, and it's about the official government UFO organizations of the world out there. And this paper is well researched, tons of references. I think I have 28, 29, 30 maybe references in there, and these are all, for the most part, government references, because there's several countries out there in South America and France that have official UFO organizations, and how they came about is really interesting. I also cover the UK too in this paper. So come see us in Orlando for MUFON this year as well. But you can find that on our events page at openminds.tv. Oh, you just go to openminds.tv. You sign up for the email that's in the upper right-hand corner, and you're set. You're going to have information on UFOs and events, and you're good to go. And it's your one-stop shop, baby. So thank you all so much for joining us this week. It's a short week, so we're a little late. We're coming out on Tuesday, but hey, I wasn't sure I'd be able to put out a show at all this week. But we got more shows coming up, so it's going to be a great summer. We will talk to you soon. Adios, muchachos.